Right, so last week, just a little eensy recap. Last week, we talked about building with first things first. Building with first things first. Actually, that's a wrong slide. That's my fault. Bad pastor. All right, so not that one. But in any event, we talked last week about building with first things first. And we said that putting God's kingdom first helps us to replace worry over things with trust in our Father. Helps us to deal with issues more effectively, helps us from idolizing our needs, and helps us to lead basically a more adventurous life. It's a life without worry, that a life not dominated by worry is simply a more adventurous life. Today, though, we're going to be talking about building with sound judgment. Our passage for the day is Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 6. Matthew 7, verses 1 through 6. It reads as follows. Jesus says this, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way that you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Don't give to dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces." This is a very small section of Jesus' teaching, and yet it's kind of popular. One verse in it is popular. This verse 1, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged." Our culture loves this verse. This may be like the number one Bible verse of our culture. Don't judge, or you will be judged. If anybody knows anything usually about the Bible, or especially the New Testament, that's going to be your one verse that people know. Don't judge, or you too will be judged, right? People think that they know this passage pretty well. What it really is that a lot of people, and including a lot of Christians, know the verse really well. It's really popular. It's a small, this whole section, though, is a small section of Jesus' teaching, and it rests on an absurd illustration. The illustration Jesus uses is absurd, right? Here's the picture. "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye?" Right? The image here is exactly what it sounds like. It's almost silly. It's meant to be silly. It's meant to make you think, oh, that's just so silly. Because the plank he's talking about is literally a plank. It's something, some kind of beam that you'd build a house with. You'd build a structure with. It's like it's some kind of crazy big old thing, and you're supposed to just have this picture of somebody who just walking around with a massive plank in their eye. When I was a kid, I was a big Looney Tunes fan. I loved Warner Brothers. Disney didn't make any sense to me, right? I think because I was a kid, and like Warner Brothers had just a lot more swift and blinding violence. And so I have to own that, because it's like, why didn't I grow up a Disney kid, and why was I a Warner Brothers kid? I was like, because in Warner Brothers, the stakes were really high. They had anvils, right? Dudes had anvils, and I mean, all kind of weird stuff. Sometimes they pull out a shot, like Elmer Fudd had a shotgun, like all the time, right? I mean, it was, you look back at that, it's like, man, they weren't playing around. This was high stakes stuff, right? Dynamite was a staple. Right? And this is the kind of thing you'd see in like a Warner Brothers cartoon with like somebody who, you know, maybe like, you know, somebody's chasing Bugs Bunny. Bugs Bunny gets the best of him because Bugs Bunny almost gets the best of everybody. And like he ends up with a massive plank in his eye and he's walking around with a plank in his eye. That's how absurd the image is. It's absurd. Right? Someone's got a plank in their eye. It's a beam, massive piece of wood that you use in building, contrasted with a speck, which is a lot more realistic. We all have had something in our eye before. Something we can't get it out, it's terrible, and you need time, your tears start to flow, which is exactly what the function your tears have is to get things out of your eye, and you get it out. That we can relate to. It's an absurd image, right? Meant to illustrate the absurdity of judging incorrectly. It's absurd, right? But then we have an absurd interpretation, as I've already alluded to. The absurd interpretation of this passage is that one ought not to judge at all. Now, if you just hang out in verse 1, that is the impression you would get. It's totally the impression you would get. Don't judge at all. Never make a judgment, right? Never discriminate between one thing and the other, and don't dare say that one thing is better than another thing. Don't do that. Don't do that. You're supposed to just flatten everything out, right? Flatten out everything so that we have exactly the same kind of value for every single thing, every behavior, right? Every way in which people are wired, every predisposition. Don't judge. Well, if you hang out in verse 1, that's exactly what you get, which is why people mostly hang out in verse 1. Right? And it can be really comfortable to do that, because then in verse 2, Jesus tells us it's high stakes to judge. It's really high stakes. He says, for the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. And what he's getting at there is very clear. He's saying, look, the way that he's clear, the way you judge others, you'll be judged by who? Well, I think by other people, but then more specifically by God. And then with the measure you use, it'll be measured to you, the intensity of your judgment, right? The intensity with which we judge. A measure is exactly what it sounds like. If you're cooking and you have certain measures you have to use in order to make your meal the right way, to prepare it the right way, that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be an amount, a quantity. And he's saying, the same measure you use is what will be used to you. By who? Other people? Yeah, but let's make it a little bit more high stakes. Let's make it a Warner Brothers teaching. Really high stakes. By God, right? So you read all that, and if you hang out right there, you're like, oh, okay, no judgments. I'm good. I am good. I will make no moral judgments at all. I'm done, right? I am done. I will not make a judgment at all, which is highly appealing. It's an attractive interpretation, very attractive, right? It's a lot less messy than life is. Because making judgments and discriminating between one thing and another, it makes life really not messy, right? You will have lots of friends. People will like you, especially on social media, right? People will like you. The issue, though, is as attractive as all that is, it's an impossible interpretation. It's impossible, right? It's impossible. It's impossible according to the passage. Because what's interesting is you read it, you figure out, no, Jesus does want us to make judgments. Just right ones, as opposed to terrible ones, right? You sense this in the end, because suddenly there's this bit that no one ever talks about. Verse 6, do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and tear you to pieces. And Jesus there is not just talking about wild animals, even though that's the metaphor he uses. Jesus is talking about people. Friends, let me assure you, to arrive at the point where you are calling people dogs and pigs involves making an easy bit of a moral judgment. Just a small one. So making no judgments is an impossible interpretation, and it's also impossible to live that way. To be a moral creature, you have to look at some things and say, that's terrible. You may even say, I love people doing the terrible thing, but that's still terrible. Right? And this over here is good. And you might even say, I don't think I'm as good as I would like to be, but over here, this is good. Right? And yes, you even have to do that during Pride Month. So what do we do here? Because we have high stakes, really, really high stakes, right? Jesus says, judge not, or you too will be judged, and God himself will judge us the same way we judge other people, in the same manner, and also with the same intensity. But then he tells us how to judge. What do we do? What do we do? How do we break that tension? What's happening here? I think there's a way, and Jesus shows us the way. It's very clear, actually, in this absurd picture that he paints for us of someone walking around in a Warner Brothers cartoon with a plank sticking out of their eye, right? Versus someone else who has a speck. And here it is. Here's how we're going to say it. The way to break the tension is this. Judgment starts with me, not thee. That's it. Judgment starts with me and not thee, right? It's not a question about whether we'll make moral judgments. You have to exist and be a moral creature in this world. If you're a Christian, you really have to make moral judgments. You have to. There is no way out of it. You have to. We're commanded to do so, right? You see it in this passage. You will see it even more dramatically as we continue on the Sermon on the Mount. Coming up about next week, well, maybe not next week because we're going to be with the missionaries, but about 2 weeks from now, you are going to see where Jesus commands and says, yep, make moral judgments, because there's fake-o people out there and there's real people out there, and you need to discern because you don't want to get taken in by people who want to punk you out spiritually. You got to make moral judgments, right? It's high stakes, but we got to do it. So how do we break the tension? Well, the tension is this. The issue is where we start. Because the temptation is always to start with somebody else. It's you! You stink! Right? I saw that thing you put up on Facebook. I'm going to get you! Right? Start with you and end with me. Even if we get around to me, we probably aren't going to get around to me. Jesus flips it around. He's like, no. Start with me and end with thee. And thee's just, of course, a old school way, a King Jimmy way of saying you. Start with me and end with thee. And that's how we break the tension. And if we're going to do that, to judge rightly, right, there's a few confrontations we need to have. If we're going to start judgment with me, and end with thee, or start with ourselves and end with someone else when it comes to judgment, then there's some confrontations we need to have. We need to take a good long look in the mirror if we're going to do this. There's a few confrontations that we got to have. So I'm going to say this. If judgment starts with me and not thee, right, then I have to confront my biases. I got to confront my biases. When I'm looking at other people outside of myself, before I begin to evaluate them, before I get on Facebook and do my thing, before I let Twitter do my, before I let my fingers tweet, first I got to look at myself and say, am I biased? Am I looking at things objectively? Or is a plank in my eye keeping me from clearly evaluating a person, a situation? Right? Am I objective? Can I objectively say that? Before I make a judgment about this news item that's come out and it looks terrible and everybody's commenting on social media and everybody's got an idea about what happened, look at myself and say, am I biased? Especially if something negative comes out about someone who I disagree with politically, am I more biased to say, oh yeah, you got her. I love it because I don't like her. I can't stand her. I don't like her political decisions. I don't like the way she legislates. I don't like her, so I'm more predisposed to believe what? Bad things. Because of my biases. Because I got biases that are on the opposite aisle ideologically and politically. And so something bad comes out, I'm like, yes, this is amazing. This is awesome. Right? Instead of saying, okay, time out. Yeah, I don't like so-and-so. I may even have good reasons to not like so-and-so or what so-and-so does, but is this true? Is this true about them? Is this news piece about him or about her actually true? And that means taking time, look in the mirror and say, time out. Before I do anything, I already know my biases. I need to check myself and get that plank out of my eye. And look up things objectively and say, this might not be true. I might want it to be true because he or she is not on my team, but it's not true. Or maybe it isn't true. I got to confront my biases. Next, if judgment starts with me and not thee, I also need to confront my pride. I have to confront my pride or my arrogance. There's a story about a guy. He wanted to impress his friends with his eye for art as they went to an art gallery together, but he forgot his glasses, and he was nearsighted, and he couldn't really see even like a hand just right in front of his face. But he figured he could wing it, right? He could make all kinds of abstract comments and observations that he wanted to make, you know. He could just say all kinds of cool sounding things, acting as if he could rightly judge art. So he approached, he could make out a frame in front of him, right? He knew a picture was in it. And so he just approached the frame. He started criticizing the picture in the frame, even though he couldn't see it. Said, oh, why would anybody want to paint something so hideously ugly? I mean, it's truly a rendering of the object, but why waste time painting such a disgusting subject? Everybody was laughing by this time because his wife whispered into his ear and said, John, it's a mirror. Right? He wanted to look good. He wanted to look good. His plank in the eye was pride. Wanting to look good ended up being goofy. We're told in Proverbs that pride goes before a fall. That we'll stumble, and we will stumble hard, led by pride and arrogance. Right? Pride's a killer. We're told in Scripture, God hates pride. Hates it. Because basically it's human beings, it's us puffing ourselves up, making ourselves something that we're not, living falsely. And it blinds us to reality, especially the reality of who we really are. And we end up beginning to think things like ourselves, making ourselves out to be godlike. And especially when it comes to judgment, when we begin to judge and we're operating with pride, we will put ourselves in the place of God. And we will judge people as if we're God, as if we have a heaven or a hell to put them in, and we do not. And we don't keep the books. We got to confront our pride. If judgment starts with me and not thee, I also need to confront my ignorance. I need to confront my ignorance. Pastor Chuck Swindoll, he tells this story. He was preaching at a Christian camp. And on the first day, there's this guy who approached him and said how much he was looking forward to hearing Dr. Chuck Swindoll preach in person for the very first time. That evening, Swindoll noticed the man. He was sitting near the front. But just a few minutes into his sermon, the man was sound asleep. Right? Swindoll thought to himself, well, maybe he's tired. After a long day's drive, maybe he just can't help himself. But the same thing happened night after night. Right? And so Swindoll was getting exasperated. He thought, if this guy really wants to hear me preach, why does he keep falling asleep? On the last night, the man's wife came up and apologized for her husband's inattention to the messages. She explained that he'd recently been diagnosed with terminal cancer, and the medication he was taking for his pain made him extremely sleepy. But it had been his lifelong dream to hear Swindoll preach in person before he died, and now he had fulfilled that goal. See? He didn't know. Right? What looked like is just this guy just got up front, sat up front, oh, I can't wait to hear you, and just decided to just do a snooze fest as he was preaching. Man was close to death. Right? And he just had meds to manage his pain. Sometimes we don't know things. There's details that we don't know. There's a story that we don't know, right? There's circumstances that we don't know in people's lives. There's things we don't understand about them, right? And we can make a crazy judgment about who they are, right? C.S. Lewis said this one time. He said, you know, it's easy to judge the guy who maybe is, you know, He's a Christian, and he's smoking cigarettes, and he's doing all kinds of different things. C.S. Lewis said, okay. He said, Do you have any idea what he was like before he came to know Christ? Right. Perhaps he's on some incredible incline of discipleship where he came from something completely crazy in his life. And you just happen to catch him when he's just in a different stage of his development from you. Right? You don't know. You don't know. You don't know where people come from. You don't know the circumstances. We're not God. We don't have the whole picture all the time. It's a plank in the eye. We don't know. We're not God. We have God-like knowledge. If judgment starts with me and not thee, I also got to confront my mixed motives. Mixed motives. It's sometimes with judgment where we got like, you know, 1 foot in a good place with judgment and then 1 foot in a terrible place. Right? It's possible to be right and not righteous. It's possible to have the exact right answer when we're evaluating someone or evaluating something and to say, you know, that's wrong, that's incorrect, but they have a really crappy motive, right? I can correct somebody and be utterly right in correcting them. Some aspect of life, something that's gone wrong, but my motive could be really, really crazy. Maybe like maybe just something about them I don't like, and I'm looking. It's like there's a trap I've sprung for them, and I'm like, I finally got you. And it's got nothing to do with God. It's got nothing to do with helping them. Instead, it's got to do with the fact that I just don't like you, and I want bad things for you. And now, not only do I get to see bad things for you, but I get to look righteous doing it. See that? It's possible to be able to do the right thing with the incredibly wrong motive. Our motives can be mixed when we judge. Can be mixed when we judge. Right. This happens a lot right now, I think, with the advent of social media. Right. Where it's very tough for people, I think, especially through the mediums we have online, to distinguish between what it is to be right and what it is to be righteous, right? So this one time in the life of a lady, she got famous in all the wrong ways in about 2013. She was 30 years old. She was the senior director of corporate communications at a communications company, and she was traveling from New York to South Africa, and she was on Twitter. And she decided that she had all these little things in travel that, you know, you make it a long trip from New York to South Africa. By the way, that is a long trip, right? And, you know, people are going to rub you the wrong way. You just got to live with it. You know you're on a long trip on a plane ride. Look, you're in a tin can in the air. You're going from New York to South Africa. You got to cool it, right? Things are going to get weird. Well, she was kind of just mentally recording all the things that were happening. There was a weird German guy. And he needed some deodorant. And that went from her heart to Twitter. And then she talked about, you know, the guy who was British, and he had bad teeth. And that went from her heart to Twitter. Right. And then, remember, she was going to Africa. And she made a joke about AIDS. And that went from her heart and her mind to Twitter. Aha. And she just put it up there, and that was it. Right? She had just about 170 Twitter followers. Well, by the time she got off the plane, she had like a friend getting in touch with her saying, I'm so sorry about what's happening. I'm so sorry about what's happening. She had no idea what was going on. Basically, her comments on Twitter, especially the big one about AIDS in Africa, making fun of people, right, went viral. Her company got a hold of it. This did not go well for her. Life wrecked, right? Life wrecked. And people not just saying, we got you because you said this thing, and it was bad. What she said was bad. I won't repeat it. But it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, you're just goofy. Right, you are just goofy. You traveling and you are posting a bunch of crazy stuff, and you need to like not let everything in your mind make it to the internet. Right, you need to cool it. What are you doing? right? But everything lives on the internet, and everybody's addicted to outrage, and everybody's looking for the scapegoat, and everybody's looking to be cool by finding the scapegoat, finding the bad person, and destroying them. And at times destroying their lives, right? I can't tell you how many times I've heard about so-and-so said such-and-such, and then people call their employers, and people get fired, right? Why, right? You might be right. What she said was, it was reprehensible, there's no doubt. She shouldn't have thought it, much less written it, right? But why were people hopping on her? People were hopping on her because it felt good, because it made them feel righteous, right? You can be right and not righteous. God judged the mixed motives, right? God judged the mixed motives. Lastly, judgment starts with me and not thee. So I don't give my best to the worst people. So far, in the image that we have is somebody with a massive plank in their eye who wants to minister to somebody and take the speck out of their brother's eye, right? You could obviously add their sister's eye, right? That's it. You got a big plank in your eye. You want to take the speck out of your brother or sister's eye. And Jesus is like, what are you doing? You can't do surgery. Anybody else? You can't see. You got a plank in your eye that's like from a Looney Tunes cartoon. Thou art nuts. Do self-surgery first. Take care of your mixed motives. Take care of your biases. Take care of your arrogance and your pride. Right? Deal with all that first. And then attend to the splinter in your brother's eye. And then the joke there is, you might find there is no splinter in your brother's eye. See that? That's the trick. You might find that you were just too blind. And there wasn't nothing wrong with your brother's vision. There was something wrong with yours. There's something wrong with mine, right? But look at the shift. Verse 6. Don't give dogs what is sacred. Don't throw pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. And you hit that, and you're like, what in the world? What happened there? Because Jesus is talking about people. He's not just talking about animals. He uses them as a metaphor because back then, people didn't have dogs for pets, right? So don't think about your dog. Like, I'm not thinking about my dog, Max. Max is cool, right? Max is all right, right? But people didn't have pet dogs. They were wild dogs running around, and it could be dangerous, right? Because dogs tend to hunt in packs. There were also wild pigs. And sometimes these things could be pretty dangerous and even kill children. So when he says this, especially to Jewish people, we talk about dogs and pigs, unclean, nasty, filthy, diseased. Don't mess with this stuff. But he's talking here about people. And you can look at it and say, Jesus, didn't you just say don't judge? Jesus looked at us and said, no, I said, judge right. Right? Judgment starts with me and not thee, so I don't give my best to the worst people. Right? Notice the shift. He's talking about brother, brother, brother before in the passage. Now he switches to dogs and pigs. You're supposed to notice that. Right? These people are the opposite of brothers and sisters, right? If you put them in the book of Proverbs, they would be something like fools, right? Something like fools. And here's the trick. When we spend our time judging people incorrectly, judging people wrongly because we got a massive plank in our eye, a big Warner Brothers size plank in our eye, the joke is this. We often give our worst to the best people, and we give our best to the worst people. See, when we can't see rightly, when we haven't done the surgery and worked in our biases and our pride, and dealt with our mixed motives and our ignorance, right? When we haven't done that, the trick to that is we often end up giving our worst to the best people. And then we flip it and we give our best to the worst people. And Jesus is saying here, don't give your best to the worst people. Once we've done surgery, self-surgery, we are freed because we can see clearly we don't have to give our best to the worst people, to pigs and dogs, right? And basically a pig and a dog is somebody who's simply not worthy of your best. It's not saying, it's not somebody who Jesus didn't die for. Jesus died for everybody. It's not somebody who God does not love. God loves everybody. But it is somebody who, because of their foolishness, is perverted in such a way that they're not worthy of your best. And not only that, they will pervert your best and turn it back on you and devour you. Now, Jesus isn't saying something like, go destroy somebody or go, you know, destroy somebody like this on Twitter or on Facebook or call them names or talk behind their back or whatever. He's just saying something very clear. He says, don't give dogs what's sacred. Don't throw your pearls to pigs. It's just saying this. Don't give these people your best. That's it. That's all he's saying. Don't give these people your best. Don't give these people the best of your time, your talent, your treasure, your friendship, your secrets. They're not worthy of your best. Don't do it. And he knows when we got a big plank in our eye, not only do we give the best people our worst, but we also give the worst people our best. And he's saying, don't do that. Don't get tricked. Don't get tricked. So here's what we can say to wrap all this up, right? Judgment starts with me, not thee, right? And so we have to have a number of confrontations as we look in the mirror. And we can say this, that once we've done the self-surgery, we got clear vision. We can see clearly. Clear vision transforms judgment. Jesus is not telling us not to make judgments. He is saying clear vision will transform judgment. It transforms how we judge. It doesn't eliminate the fact that we judge. It transforms how we judge. Clear vision, getting the cartoon plank out of our eye, transforms our judgment. Because when we judge ourselves first, we can see others more clearly. We can see other people rightly, the way God sees them. What does that mean? Well, here's what it means. If clear vision transforms judgment, it means we can have patient judgment, right? It's tough to be patient in our world right now because people judge so quickly. And then when you add in the internet and social media and everything like that, we have the ability to make snap judgments and to get caught up in thousands of other people's snap judgments. And it's like, look, sometimes we need to be patient. We just need to say, look here, I'm going to just cool out. There's some news item that just came down the pike where somebody is accused of doing such and such, and now everybody in social media is destroying them and obliterating them. I'm going to just chill out. You know what? I'm going to delete that from my news feed because I don't need that nonsense in my life. Right? I'm just not going to look. I'm going to let it bake. I'm going to give it a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And I'm going to just cool out and just let it pass. And usually you're going to find out that there's some details that nobody knew. There's some things that that people didn't know. Almost always, some kind of way, the story's skewed. It's wrong. But we rush to judgment so quickly in this culture that we don't take time. Just let something bake. Just cool out. Just chill. Right? If we're patient, like God is with us, it's funny, one of the chief characteristics of God in Scripture is God is what? Slow to anger. You know what it captures a word picture? It means he has a long fuse. I'm glad with me God has a long fuse. Right? So I don't want my fuse to be any longer or any shorter than God's. Be patient. It means you have the space to be discerning, humble, curious, the space to listen. Listen to God, listen to others. Just cool out. There's no rush. Very, very rarely is there a rush to make a judgment. Every now and then you run into something in life where you gotta like really hop on it. But usually you can be patient. You can cool it. Right? Clear vision transforms judgment, which means we can have merciful judgment. And mercy and judgment are not opposites, by the way. In the prophet Habakkuk, chapter 3, verse 2, Habakkuk the prophet, you read it, starts out, Habakkuk wants God to judge people. He starts out, he's like, where are you? Your people are crazy. Why aren't you on this? Why don't you judge these people? And then God shows up and has a little talk with Habakkuk. And by the end of Habakkuk, this is what Habakkuk says. He says, Lord, I've heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds, Lord. Repeat them in our day, in our time. Make them known in wrath. Remember mercy. See? Mercy and judgment are not opposites, right? I've had times in my life where I'm like, Lord God, if you're going to judge me right now, please don't forget mercy. And then I've had the opportunity, and I had to grow into this, to at times having to make different kinds of judgments, especially as a pastor. But at the same time, in my mind, I'm saying, Lord, where's the mercy? We got to have mercy coupled with this. It can't be without mercy. Our judgment can and should be merciful because that's how God is towards us. We also have helpful judgment. Helpful judgment. I had a friend who I pastored, actually, the first church I pastored, and she was a prosecutor. She was very good at her job. Really, really good as a prosecutor, right? Just in everything, you know, godly. You know, she was the way you would want a prosecutor to be, but she was good, right? And she asked for some prayer for discernment because she was feeling like, she said, you know, she said, yeah, basically she's good at putting people in jail. But she also was starting to hear stories as she was doing that. And she was realizing that, yeah, that obviously needs to happen. But she also wanted to help people. So she prayerfully discerned her calling to be a judge. Because then, just get this, she wanted to be a judge because she wanted to be able to not just put people in jail, even though that does need to happen. But she wanted to be able to administer help. And she became one. She became a judge, right? If we will see clearly, have clear vision, transform our judgment, because we did surgery on ourselves first, then we're in position to help people. Sometimes the people that we're judging actually simply need help. That's not all the times. There are pigs and dogs. But sometimes people just need somebody to come alongside, put their arm around them and say, I really think you need some help. There's some key issues where you need help. Can I walk with you? You'd be surprised at the number of people who say yes. Even people who you may not like and who you never thought would accept your help. Lastly, if we will have clear vision, right, our judgment will be transformed into wise judgment. We'll have wisdom, right? Wisdom from God. We'll know how to walk with people. We will know at times how to walk away from people. We will know and we'll say, oh, pig and dog moment. Yep, I'm gonna leave you alone because you're gonna tear me to pieces, just like Jesus said you would. Yep, I need that toxicity out of my life. Bye-bye. It's okay to do that. Don't think you're not being like Jesus to do that. You should do that. There are people in your life, you need to look at them and say, bye-bye. You need to just get out of that. Get out of that nonsense. Get out of that relationship. Bye-bye. Right? There are people who your relationship needs to be with them a once-a-year postcard. Because they're crazy. Right? You don't have to hurt them. You don't have to talk about them. Don't gossip about them. But you just need to say, bye-bye. Wisdom. And that is godly, right? Wisdom. Wisdom. Friends, the stakes are high in terms of our judgment, but we're called to judge. One Sunday morning, many, many years ago, this young altar boy, he was assisting the priest in the celebration of Holy Communion at a small Catholic church in the European village, and he was nervously carrying out his duties. He accidentally dropped the flask of wine, and the village priest immediately struck the boy sharply on his cheek, and he said, leave the altar and don't come back. The boy's pride was wounded, more deeply than his face was. And he left the church, and this priest was still screaming at him as he left. And he refused to enter the church ever again. And that boy grew up to become Josip Tito, the atheistic communist leader who ruled Yugoslavia for several decades. Oddly enough, not long after that, on another Sunday morning, in a large American city, there's another young altar boy. He was assisting in the celebration of Holy Communion at a Catholic cathedral. He also accidentally dropped the flask of wine. The bishop turned and looked at him. But instead of replying in anger, he gently smiled and whispered, "Someday you're going to be a priest." That boy grew up and he became known as Archbishop Fulton Sheen, a Catholic evangelist, and he was famous for, he had a 1950s TV show called Life is Worth Living. See the difference there? Judgment is high stakes. Don't refuse to do it, because Jesus does not give us that out, but do it with care. Start with yourself first. Amen? Praise God.